You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one. Road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flair out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for an inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I am one of your hosts, Eric Cole. You may recognize me for my work over on TalkingChop.com, where I have been writing since 2015 and have been part of the editorial team since 2016. That sounds about right. I seemingly kind of get that the number of years and when actually things kind of started transitioning for me confused quite often. If you want to follow me over on Twitter, you can follow me at Leprechaun with a K. Joining me as my co-host this evening, as often, is the great at Braves MILB on Twitter, Garrett Spain. Garrett, how are you, man?
I'm a lot better now that you called me great. I appreciate that a lot.
Well, you know, I have to tell at least one lie every podcast, so that's the important thing, right? Obviously, always good to talk baseball with Garrett, particularly minor league baseball. A lot of the interest is not particularly on the minor league side right now, it's fair to say. Aside from the fact that the Braves did win the World Series and people were still kind of reminiscing upon that. And we've been, in fact, doing that reminiscing on this very podcast feed. If you want to get our kind of our thoughts on what the top postseason moments from this past postseason run and kind of the order in which we had them. Yeah, you can find Brad, Scott, and I's thoughts on the last Talking Chop podcast, which was a ton of fun. You can also, you know, make sure you're listening to the Daily Hammer. Make sure you're listening to the show as well. All are on the same feed. Garrett, I actually will pick your brain really quick. What was your top moment from the postseason run period? There seems to be a popular opinion, and then I feel like I'm like in like the firmly the second tier choice, but I feel very strongly that where kind of my choice was. Where if you're thinking about like during the postseason run, what was the moment for you?
It was Matzik closing out striking out the side by a long shot. Like that's
my man. Yep. I will say I know. Yeah, I mean, look, if you say Jorge Soler's three-run homer, you will not get an argument from me because one, that was an absolute tank. Two, it was in the clinching game. And, you know, there's everything about that moment. Like, all the different camera angles are great. The one that's, like, from the side and you see all the orange towels come down instantly. It, like, killed the crowd. It put the game, like, it felt like the game was just over when it happened. I get it. But that meant, like, I'm with you. The Matzik moment, I think, was a firm number two for everybody, except me. And I'm like, I think it's a firm number one.
Yeah, and that helps too because it came in a home game too. So you kind of had the energy of the crowd in the moment too. And it was a really great moment. You know, the other ones that kind of jump out, the Rosario home run in the NLCS was a huge moment. Soler leading off the World Series was a home run. It was a fun postseason. But for me, Matzik, man, that was just – because it like – there was this like – almost hopelessness, like it's going to happen again, and then it didn't.
Yep. Someone on Twitter actually was really explained that really clearly. That was the moment where Atlanta sports curse happens. Every other moment, that's where it happens. And Matzik just said nay nay, and just handled business. In 11 pitches, struck out those guys. That blows my mind. Anyway, I just wanted to get your thoughts on record too, because I know that you don't get to talk a whole lot about the Major League Club. You're down here on the minors, kind of in the trenches with me on this stuff. But I kind of want to make sure we could get your record thoughts on record as well. But now just another voice making a really strong case for, you know, the Mets, you know, striking out the side being the biggest moment. I'm just throwing that out there. But obviously that was a ton of fun. And it's kind of fun being able to reminisce about that. For those who aren't aware, what we've been doing on the podcast, this particular one of late, is going down each of the minor league rosters and kind of sharing our thoughts, kind of working our way through all the positions, different guys. This allows us to both kind of go in a little bit more in depth on some of the guys that we don't necessarily get to talk about. And we also get to actually cover guys that, other than in the minor league recaps, we just don't talk about all that much, because there's guys that, like, just because they're not in the top 30 list or even in our honorable mentions, doesn't mean they don't have value and that they're not interesting. And this kind of allows us to kind of go through the whole roster, guys who were on the team and then moved on, or, you know, got demoted, whatever the case may be, you know, maybe they're injured, and also just getting to talk about guys that just don't get a lot of screen time, right? And I think it's kind of important to be able to give those guys some mentions and kind of get their names out there so that people can at least keep their eyes out for them, because things change very, very quickly on a year-to-year basis down the minor leagues. And that's not just the guys who are in the system, but it's also how each guy individually performs. You know, obviously the names, there's going to be a lot of turnover between minor league free agents and all that stuff. But the more important thing is kind of like keeping an eye on the fact that, like, these guys can and do change our minds constantly. And, you know, again, we like to try to do our best to kind of find as many of the diamonds in the rough as we can, and then kind of keep an eye on them, and then we'll see what happens next season, and we'll go from there. But before we do that, we do have some news on the minor league side. And the first piece, and I think that, you know, this is a guy that Garrett and I have been covering for a long, long time, and he has been around for a long, long time. Gwinnett Stripers legend, formerly Gwinnett Braves legend, Sean Kazmar, after making it back to the major leagues in 2021, very, very short appearance, goes back down to Gwinnett. Father Time finally caught up with him. He certainly wasn't kind of the same productive guy in Gwinnett that he had been, and he finally decided to retire. What a career. Again, mostly in the minor leagues, but that's a guy in the minor leagues. He put together one of those careers that not only statistically was really, really strong, but also the mark that he made on a lot of the players, the prospects that came through on the teams that he was on, all the coaches, all the players sing Kaz's praises. I just want to put my thoughts out there. I hope that he has the happiest retirement possible. Hopefully, maybe he gets to spend a little more time with his family. If he wants to decide to get into the coaching game, I guarantee you the Braves are going to be willing to at least give him that opportunity somewhere, and I'm sure he'd be a great one. Garrett, kind of share your thoughts on Kaz and, you know, your thoughts about him not being in the system anymore, because it's pretty surreal to me.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that's like, it's hard to imagine him retiring just because he's done it for so long. And, you know, I think mostly it's pleasing that he kind of went out with, you know, the best moments of his career, right? He got back to the major leagues and for the first time in 12 years, you know, it's an incredible story there to get there. You know, the team ends it with the World Series, so he's going to get a ring. Like, it's a fitting end to his career. And, you know, I'm glad he's able to, you know, step back, like you said, spend time with his family and, you know, kind of decide where the rest of his career is going to go. And it's definitely great to see guys kind of, you know, make their own decision and kind of decide for themselves, hey, I'm done. I don't want to do, you know, I'm happy with where my career is. I'm happy with what I've done. I'm going to step away now. This is the time for me. And he seemed to be, you know, he's set in his decision. He knows what he's doing and, you know, he knows what he wants to do. And I'm really happy that he's kind of knows that he's reached the finality of his career, and doesn't seem like there's as much longing to, you know, he wants to get back out there, you know, and I'm sure there will be, you know, come spring training next year, he'll be like, man, I want to be out there. But there isn't that, like, wow, I really wish I could give it another year type of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, whatever he chooses to do with his retirement, I hope he enjoys it. I'm kind of with you on the ring. You know, it's funny that, you know, like, we think about things like a guy makes one appearance with the Braves and they end up getting a World Series ring. And, you know, a lot of people are like, I can't believe this guy's going to end up getting a ring, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm look, when you get a World Series, just, you know, everyone who played, give them a ring, right? Like, it means a ton to them. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. But I will say that the idea of Sean Casimir getting a ring on the year that he retires, like, warms my heart in a, like, a very fundamental way. And I'm thrilled that I'm thrilled for him that he, you know, again, has gotten to go out on his own terms, gets to enjoy whatever he chooses to enjoy. Again, he could be into coaching and he could just, you know, just decide to be a family man or decide to move on to something else completely different. I don't have great insight as to what his plans are, but I'm really, really hope that he enjoys whatever it is, because there's not a guy that put more into this game at the minor league level than him. And, you know, that imprint that he made, not just on the coaches and, you know, it's on those players that came through too. All those teammates that just the little bits of advice about how to be a professional, how to succeed, you know, little tips here and there, all that stuff adds up over time. And he was around for a long, long time. Wish him nothing but the best. And, you know, have a happy retirement, Kaz. We're going to miss you. It's going to be kind of wild not having you in the recaps anymore. You know, for a lot of times when minor league guys retire, you know, you don't really hear about it unless someone asks, like, hey, whatever happened to that guy? And you look up like, oh, I guess he retired. But in Kaz's case, he's gotten a lot of love, a lot of attention, both from the Stripers, media folks, as well as, you know, the Braves and, you know, just a lot of people online. Just, I'm happy for him. I wish him nothing but the best. Other than that news stuff, we do have one other item, and that is the minor league gold gloves, which is a fairly recent thing that has started up. And I will say that I suspected three names, possibly four. Braden Shoemake was certainly a candidate, I think, for at shortstop. Shea Langlers was definitely a candidate at catcher. Michael Harris was definitely a candidate in the outfield. And Christian Pache was definitely a candidate and probably a favorite in the outfield. I will say that if I had to pick two guys, it would not have been the two guys that were picked. And it's not a knock on anyone in particular. I just personally thought that Shea Langlers was a relatively straightforward pick for the gold glove at catcher. That is not what happened. Adley Rutschman did defeat him for that honor. And that's not a knock on Adley. Adley's a very good defensive catcher. I don't want to take anything away from him. But that felt more like we need a former number one pick on our list as opposed to awarding the guy who's actually the best defensively. And I firmly believe that defensively Shea Langlers is the better catcher than Adley Rutschman. But the two that did win were Christian Pache. Again, not a crazy big surprise there, as well as Michael Harris, who gets a gold glove, has performed very, very well on the outfield, really good instincts. Doesn't have necessarily like that same sort of like straight line speed or like crazy highlight reel type stuff that maybe we see from Pache from time to time, but he just does everything well out there. Again, good reads, moves back the ball as well. Has a strong arm, just does a lot of good things out there. What were your kind of thoughts on the minor league gold glove stuff, and kind of do you feel like there were any mistakes or any guys that maybe should have gotten more consideration on the Braves side?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like you said, I mean, Langlers probably deserved it. You know, minor league gold glove awards, it's not like, I don't guess it's that big of a deal, really. Pache is the best defensive outfield prospect in this minor leagues, you know, and I think that guys, you know, in a lot of situations, a guy like Pache was going to win it based on reputation alone. And I mean, if you watch him at Gwinnett this year, I mean, he was, you know, everywhere. He's great. He's ridiculously good. You know, I do love that, you know, Harris is getting recognition, because, you know, I said it kind of at the beginning of the year that, you know, there were some questions about, you know, is he a center fielder long term or does he end up in a corner? And I think that he's fairly new. You know, he pitched more than he hit in high school. And so he's somewhat new to really playing outfield full time. And you can see the improvements that he's put in. And he's turned himself, you know, into a guy that's a legitimate center fielder. And that's kind of it's really great. You know, his progression in center field has been one of the more impressive things that I've seen out of a young prospect on that side of the ball.
Absolutely. So again, that's only a minor quibble I have, is that I think that Shea was probably more deserving than Adley. But beyond that, like a couple really deserving defenders. Michael had a great year on both sides of the ball, you know, and, you know, Christian Pache kind of continues to show one of the reasons why folks are so excited about him, because he doesn't have to hit all that much with the type of value that guy can give defensively. If he can at least hit average, then he's going to be a really, really valuable player in the major leagues. So without further ado, Garrett, it's time to talk about the Rome Braves, a Rome Braves team that changed a lot over the course of the year, a lot of promotions that came from Augusta and through Rome to Mississippi, guys who kind of started off in Rome and end up moving their way up, guys who end up getting hurt. A lot of roster flux happens at Rome, and this is generally the case in the lower minors. If you're going to move guys aggressively, you kind of move them out of those lower levels more aggressively than, say, moving a guy from AA to AAA or something like that. It's kind of like the low A, high A. This is where we see the most aggressive roster management, and that's what we saw this year. So we're going to talk a little bit first about the position player side, and we're going to start with catchers. Primarily speaking, what we saw was the catching being done by Logan Brown, at least before he was hurt, as well as Ruzbar Estrada. Talk to me about this catcher's group and kind of what were your thoughts about him.
Yeah, Brown, I mean, Brown of the two is, you know, the more legitimate prospect. I don't, you know, there was, you know, he's 24 now at high A, and there was kind of, you had kind of hoped that he would hit a little bit this year. You know, we don't expect a ton out of Brown's bat. He's a defense first prospect, and he's a good defender behind the plate. You know, a kind of guy that could be a backup type in the future. And, you know, it kind of, there was maybe a hope that he would hit well enough to kind of, you know, push himself to double A, do something like that. And he didn't really do that. And then obviously he ended the year hurt. And so it's kind of, you know, he's definitely, you know, like I said, he's not a guy that we ever really saw as, you know, a starting type catching prospect, but we hope, you know, you got to hope that he hits enough to kind of fold into that role of being a backup catcher at the next level. And he did not do himself any favors this year. It just wasn't a great season. You know, he struck out more than I think we were hoping. You know, there's not a ton of power in that bat, and so he does have to hit for a lot of contact. He does occasionally have to draw walks, and he didn't do either of those things. And so offensively, it wasn't a good year. And some of that is a year off of the game is hard for guys, but he did start out the season fairly hot before fading down the stretch. You know, it's unfortunate for him, and it's unfortunate that he ended his season hurt. So going into next year, he may end up repeating high A. I would almost expect it. Of course, you know, there's not really a ton of catchers at double A either, so he could get promoted just based on his defense. And you kind of got to hope he hits a little bit. Again, doesn't have to be even good to be enough to potentially be a third catcher type, but yeah, he's got to do a little bit better than he did this year. Estrada is 26, and so him hitting decently at high A, like, yeah, I hope you would do that. He had, you know, games here and there where he would kind of like go crazy with like three hits and a home run. You know, in general, Estrada's fine. He's a good depth piece, and I it's good. You know, he did well filling in for Brown down the stretch after Brown got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, Estrada's certainly kind of an organizational depth piece. He's not uninteresting. He does draw a lot of walks. That certainly helps his case. It has a bit of pop in his bat. I do hope that Brown comes back from whatever his injury is, and I don't have any insight there as to kind of what that injury is. I haven't really asked around on it, to be honest, but at the same time, that's something I do need to check on to kind of see where he's at and kind of what that injury was, because going straight onto the 60-day IL kind of does raise one's eyebrows a bit, and I'm sure maybe some of that's roster considerations, but there also might have been a pretty severe injury there, so we'll kind of make sure that, you know, what's going on with him and kind of keep an eye on that going forward. Moving on to infielders, we have some familiar faces, some guys who stock's rising and some who is not rising to be fair to them. You know, we have Riley Delgado. Vaughn Grissom was promoted to Rome late in the year from Augusta and performed really, really well. You have Brett Langhorne, you have Cody Milligan, who the Braves seem to like a lot. You have Bo Phillip, who is a good defender and a really strong arm. Whether or not he hits is, I think calling that an open question is a very generous description of what Bo does. Did have some good games here and there, but largely was kind of a disappointing season for him based on where he was drafted. So talk to me a little bit about the infielders. I know that Vaughn's going to be the guy that kind of gets a lot of the headlines here, but let's run down these names and see what you think.
Yeah, I think we'll mostly save Vaughn for Augusta because, you know, we got to find guys to talk about there. You know, when he came up.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough episode. Yeah.
When he came up to high A, he was just, I mean, it was kind of like late season, you know, last couple of weeks, let's just give him a few weeks and let him go. And he was the best player on the team. I mean, he walked 11 times to 5 strikeouts, and he had an OPS over 1100. He was insane for that week. And it's cool to see him kind of come up and be able to succeed at his age, to come up and kind of make that transition again in a small sample, but make that transition well, because low A this year was not very good. So as good as he hit at that level, it was kind of a, well, let's see him against better pitching. And we saw him against better pitching and he did quite well. The guy beyond that was the most interesting was Luke Waddell. He didn't play a ton of time just cause he was a draftee. He didn't have a ton of time at the end of the season. And, he had one week where he hit for more power than he's ever hit in his career.
He won't ever hit again.
He hit 6 home runs in a week, was the best player in the minor leagues for a week. It was absurd what he did for that week. That's not who he is. You know, he's a guy who's going to make a lot of contact. He's in the Arizona Fall League making a lot of contact now. You know, he's a guy that's not going to strike out a ton. He's going to put the ball in play a good bit, you know, draw enough walks to make it work. And he's a versatile defender and he can play around the infield. And that's really good for, you know, a guy that can put the bat on the ball and play around the infield. Those guys can find roles as utility infielders, guys that can get some pinch hit at bats in the major leagues. And I do see him as a guy that could fill that role and do it fairly soon. He's an advanced bat. You know, I don't think, you know, with the lack of power, I don't think that the ceiling is there for him to really be a, in, you know, an impact starter, but I do think that, you know, a bench infielder is, you know, a pretty good outcome for him. You know, beyond that, you know, the two big names were Delgado and Phillip. Phillip was really bad on both sides of the ball this year. He wasn't like really bad at shortstop, but he was worse than I expected from him. He made a ton of errors out there, and I was kind of, he's going to have to rely on his defense if he wants to advance levels, and he did not really do that this year.
He has a crazy strong arm, but he doesn't seem to always know where it's going.
Yeah, it was a rough year for him defensively, and he's, again, raw for a college bat, and I mean, for a college player, and we don't think that he's going to hit all that well. But if he can play defense at the level that, you know, he has the athleticism, he has the arm to play shortstop at a high level. And if he can do that, you know, again, that's a guy that could be, you know, a backup shortstop type at the major league level. If he hits just a little bit, he didn't do any of that this year. It was pretty rough for him this year. And he's definitely not one of the more exciting prospects. We'll just kind of have to see, you know, it will be a long road for him if he does make it. Delgado, is a really good defender across the infield. I mean, he plays every single position very, very well. You know, again, the bat's not there. There's really no power there. He doesn't strike out a ton. He does put the ball in play a lot, but he doesn't put it in play with authority. He's not really going to hit at the major league level. The defense might be good. You know, the defense is definitely the type that you can get him to the AAA level and have him there for a few years, kind of filling up innings, moving around the infield. Could he be a backup shortstop at the major league level? Definitely. I mean, with the defensive ability, he could do that. I just don't know if there's enough impact to the bat where you say, yeah, I'll give you a bench role. I don't necessarily see that from Delgado, but I do. He had moments this year where he hit, but it just overall, he just didn't hit that well this year. And it was a rough year for him. The one guy on the infield that did surprise for the most part was Cody Milligan. He strikes out a ton. You know, he's really limited to second base. And so that hurts his profile, but he doesn't have a ton of power, but he drew a lot of walks. He hit really well at the top of that lineup for a good portion this season. He really struggled late in the year. And so we'll kind of have to see, you know, was that a fatigue thing or was that just kind of who Milligan is as a player? It's not really clear, but he was good earlier in the season. I want to see if, you know, he can kind of, if it was a fatigue thing, can he come out next year and put together more spread out time of being successful at the plate?
Yeah, the Braves certainly seem to like Cody Milliken a lot, and I've heard that from multiple people in the organization. But the second half was pretty rough for him, so we'll see if they can, he can kind of bounce back and kind of get dialed in right again. It's hard to tell. The one thing that's going to be a common denominator for us, kind of evaluating these guys, is what guys looked like after a lost season is so hard to evaluate. Like some guys just. That impacted them so much, and for some guys, it just didn't bother them at all. So you don't want to necessarily like project out from a stat line or even what you see out of a guy based off like coming off a season where they basically didn't get to play. But in Cody's case, he's a really interesting one. Bo Phillip, he's never really been that impressive his entire time in pro ball. And I am a little bit sad about Delgado in the sense that we kind of knew he wasn't going to be a power bat and there wasn't going to be an impact hitter, but then, with his defensive profile kind of being able to play all over the infield, when he was at least hitting for average, at least you could like squint your eyes and go, maybe that's a bench player. Maybe that's an interesting bench piece, but the hit tools regressed. And as he's kind of gone up in level, he's the quality of pitching has certainly impacted him quite a bit. A guy that started relatively well to the season and did not look good since then. So curious to kind of see what his future is with the organization. Again, my guess is that probably he starts the year again at high A. Maybe he's getting older too, which is a problem for him in the sense that he kind of needs to, be moving up soon if he's going to be moving up at all. So maybe he's an older player, especially without a bunch of guys in front of him, for infield spots. Maybe he gets moved up. And then they kind of just see what they've got with him because at the end of the day, you can only keep a guy in the minor leagues for so long. Vaughn Grissom was certainly a really interesting case. I thought that he should have been promoted a lot sooner than he was. So we'll kind of talk a little bit more about him during the Augusta episode. One name that we're not mentioning that did play a good chunk with Rome, but ultimately was traded was Bryce Ball, who was a guy that we were really excited about, a potential big time power bat. Unfortunately, his season before he was traded was not good. And he did not look good after he was traded either. So I'm a little bit disappointed in that. And, Brett Langhorne kind of took over the first base duties other than maybe some other guys rotating for spot starts here and there, and Langhorne, again, that's just kind of an organizational depth guy who occasionally really runs into one and seems like that every time he did run into one, it was in a big spot. He did hit a lot of like walk-off homers or go-ahead homers. He also struck out a whole bunch. So, and in Bryce's case, wish him nothing but the best. I wish things had worked out because he's a really fascinating prospect for the Braves. But unfortunately, as he went up in level and, there was more tape on him and he was figured out a little bit more, he got eaten up. And, for now, at least, it seems like that, that's not a prospect that the Braves are necessarily going to be super upset that they're going to be missing out on, with one of those trade deadline deals. That one for Jock Peterson is where he ended up going to the Cubs. So, we'll talk about the outfielders really quick because this is certainly probably the most interesting part of the offensive side of the ball for the Rome Braves before we take a quick break. Jesse Franklin and Michael Harris, a lot of headlines, moments, particularly for Harris for the whole season. And then for a glorious month and a half, Jesse Franklin would not be denied and was hitting balls to outer space. You also had Andrew Moritz and then Drew Campbell coming in late in the season, a player whose approach, frankly, disturbs me in a fundamental way, but talk to me a little bit about these outfielders and what you like about them and what you don't.
Yeah, well, I'll save the big bats for a second. There were a couple of guys on the team, and Sean Michel and Andrew Moritz were kind of somewhat interesting bats, and they just didn't hit this well, and I hit well this year, and that kind of like they were kind of guys that were like fringe. If they have a good season, maybe they push on to the top 30. They didn't do that, and they've kind of pushed themselves into that's just an organizational piece now. You're talking about Campbell. Campbell wants to hit the ball a lot, and it's he's kind of fun in like a terrifying way.
No, it's not. Oh God.
It's very interesting to watch him hit. Let's just say that. He surprisingly doesn't strike out that much for the amount that he swings. He has decent enough power. He's just, the approach is a problem. I don't think that approach will not fly getting him to the major league level. He has the athleticism to do it for sure. He has the athleticism, he's decent enough defensively to be, a fourth outfielder type, but the approach, if that doesn't change, he's not going to go too far with that approach. He'll probably, you know, that is an approach that will get exposed very, very quickly when he makes that jump to double A, and it could get ugly if it does not turn around very quickly. On to Franklin and Harris, the guys that we really want to talk about. Franklin, I mean, was unbelievable for about a month and a half there. He led the league in home runs. He led the Braves system in home runs with 24 this year. I mean, the power there is legit. He hit some balls this year, you know, out into right field, into places that, I mean, he was hitting them out in the trees in places that we have not seen left-handed bats hit them very often. And he was crushing the ball this year. He's, you know, the question, you know, the problem with him is this year he struck out quite a bit. He didn't draw a ton of walks. And so outside of really that good month, he didn't get on base a ton. And so it was either hit a home run or you didn't do a whole lot. And so with him, it's hard to judge. You know, again, you say it's hard to judge with the last year. And with him, you know, he was coming off an injury, the COVID year. He's a really, really interesting case where I think that we were really hesitant about when he struggled. It was like we were being very, very generous with him because he's in a unique situation where he's even further behind than most of the other guys that we're seeing. And so he hit well as a freshman in college, so we know he can hit. You know, the capability is there to do it. It's just going to be kind of – he's going to go to double A next year, and is the approach – is the issues with breaking balls, is that going to expose him, and is he going to be able to continue to produce that power? You know, with Franklin, he's not a center fielder. He is going to be stuck in a corner outfield spot, probably left field, and so he is going to have to hit if he's going to play at the major league level. And as long as he keeps hitting, you know, at a 30 something home run pace, he will find a role. It's just a matter of, can he hit enough, get on base enough to start as a left fielder? He definitely has the potential, and he's one of our most highly regarded prospects. I mean, he's probably going to come somewhere in the top 12, probably closer to about 10 or 11. For us this year, we haven't sat down on the list yet, but I think for me, he's either 11 or 12 right now. He's a guy that we like a lot. There's just a few too many questions right now coming off of that lost season and with the lack of on-base skill so far as a professional. There's too many questions there for me to like say, you know, he's one of the top outfield prospects in the system. Now, if he goes to double A next year and starts getting on base more, then all of a sudden that's a really, really good looking prospect, even if he is stuck in a corner spot. Michael Harris is probably the guy that we talked about most in the system all year long. And I mean, the dude just rakes. He, like, you know, we talked about earlier, his defense is really good in center field. He's got a ton of raw power that is not showing up in games yet. So we'll have to kind of see, you know, this year he had 7 home runs, 26 doubles. You know, he only had about a 142 isolated power, which is a bit below average for the league. I believe the league was right around 154 was league average. So he was a little bit below league average, which is, he has way more power than that, and the way he approaches the ball, he hits a lot of ground balls, he hits a lot of line drives, which is great for his for getting on base, and he gets on base a ton. He hits and he hits and he hits, but it does limit his power, and you want to see if he will start to hit for more power and start to lift the ball more consistently. But the thing that he did do this year was he adjusted on the fly with his approach. You know, early in the season, he was walking at like 3%. He was swinging.
It was really bad. Yep.
His approach was a real concern. It was a legitimate concern. And then, you know, right around the beginning of July, he started to make those adjustments. And, you know, from July 7th on, he walked at 12.7%. He strikes out less than 20% of the time, which is well below league average. I think league average was about 27, 28%. I mean, he is an on-base machine. He plays great defense. And if the power comes for him, that's one of the better outfielders in baseball. I mean, the potential, the athleticism, Harris is definitely one of the most exciting players. He's raw. You know, he's 20 years old. There's a lot of development that needs to go on for him. But what he did this year was a great step for him and really kind of solidify that, yeah, this is legitimately one of the top three guys in the system, and, you know, three or four guys in the system, and he's the player that the Braves can really look forward to having in their lineup in a few years.
Yeah, there are definitely some weird things with Harris statistically this year. He finished the season with an on-base percentage of .362, which is you take that from a minor league kid every time, right? Particularly with kind of, you know, how his approach was, particularly like getting victimized a little bit by pitches outside the zone. Excuse me. And, you know, he kind of – it felt like that he knew that he could hit almost anything. And in a lot of cases, he was right, but he was also, like, swinging at some pitches he shouldn't have and putting some balls in place he should have spit on them. And combined for the months of April and May, he walked a total of 7 times, which was a real concern for us, particularly when we were making our midseason list. We're like, is this guy going to, like, take a walk anytime soon? To come back and to lift his on-base percentage up to .362 tells you about what he realized that he had to – it's not shrinking, like, what pitches in the zone that he swings at. It's just – just decided just to swing a lot less pitches out of the zone, take his walks. He was stealing bases this year, was stealing bases at a good clip. I don't think he's going to be like kind of a 30 or 40 stolen base guy. He stole 27 this year. And I think like, you know, like a 15 to 20 stolen bases is kind of a place where I think he can live comfortably. He's fast. I think he might thicken up a little bit as he's kind of trying to grow into that power and grow into that body of his. And as he gets stronger, so maybe he doesn't steal quite as many bases as he would normally, but you know, the batting practice is loud. You know, all of his home runs came out on the road, and you wonder if, you know, just playing at home, playing at Rome, it was just a situation where he just wasn't able to put the ball out, just based on what his approach is. But there's real raw power in that bat, and as he has more and more time to kind of learn about what pitches to really turn on and try to put out, I think he's going to be a really, really exciting prospect. I think he could firmly put himself in the like top 30 prospects in all of baseball next season. Just a really, really exciting bat. And, you know, and again, we already talked about him defensively. He won a minor league gold glove out there in outfield. And this was a fairly, like, short pedigree of playing in the outfield period at the level, at least solely devoted to playing the position. So really, really exciting player. I was genuinely concerned that the on-base skills were going to be a problem, and he just made the adjustment and figured it out, and he just got the job done. You know, he's the guy for me, and you know, Baseball America put their list out recently, and they had him the number one prospect in the whole system, and I had to really think about that, but it wouldn't take much to convince me that actually that's where the spot that he belongs. He's really, really, he has a really, really good hit tool, a bunch of raw power in that bat too. You feel like there could be more coming. You like the speed, you like the defense. There's just a lot to like with this kid, just a lot. He just is an all-around gamer, constantly improving, constantly looking to try to figure out ways to be better. I am really, really looking forward to you. My guess is that he starts the season at AA next year. In fact, I'd be shocked if they didn't start him at AA. And, you know, is he like, you know, a sort of a transcendent prospect? He's not there yet, but I'm not going to let him convince me that he can't do it until he doesn't do it, because this is a kid that could be really, really special. Yeah, he's just really, really good. So Jesse Franklin's a weird case where, you know, you do worry a little bit about the hit tool. He did fade quite a bit kind of down the stretch, and, you know, the Arizona Fall League hasn't exactly treated him kindly either. So maybe with an offseason arrest and kind of being go back and, like, you know, be able to rework what was working for him during that crazy hot streak where he was, like, literally you couldn't get him out, and if you made one mistake in the strike zone, it was being parked 440 feet away. I'm very curious to kind of see how that plays out. You know, I would think that he's another guy that's heading towards AA as well. Drew, he drives me crazy. Like, even, like, the first game that I watched in person this year was an Augusta game where he was batting leadoff, and it's just, like, he had, like, a Williams-type, like, Estadio type approach where if anything was in within 5 feet of him, he swung at it, and he's really good at fouling off pitches. Don't get me wrong about that, but that approach, he walked like what, 3 times this year or something like that, some insane number. It was like he didn't walk at all in Rome where he spent like half of his plate appearances this year. It's hard for me to really kind of, and he's also a guy that was hurt this year too, so it's kind of, maybe you wonder if there's any lingering effects as kind of what, you know, what that impacts him going forward or anything like that. But that approach is super, super frustrating. You just, you know, swing at anything at his eyes. And again, good at fouling pitches off, but I'm not sure if that's going to work against guys who really know how to pitch, because those guys are going to get you to, if they can get you to swing, it's a lot harder to square up quality breaking stuff and, you know, quality fastballs, as opposed to low A and high A guys. Well, that's all we got for the position player side. Before we take a look at the pitching side, where there's a lot of interesting names both on that have passed through the system as well as the end of the season with Rome. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, Garrett, the Rome Braves pitching staff. A lot of high-quality names, either end of the season here or, more importantly, were promoted either from Rome and onward or through Rome in several cases and onward. I'm going to kind of let you take the reins here, kind of like, you know, well, first we'll talk about rotation guys before we kind of get into relievers that were interesting for us. You know, names to kind of run down here. So talk to me about the guys that were rotation, both in terms of who ended up and stayed there, as well as guys who moved on to greener pastures.
Man, this is a really, really good group of guys. The guy that made the most starts at the level, the guy who pitched the most innings, was Darius Vines. He pitched really well at Augusta earlier in the year, got promoted, and I'm unmuted? Yeah, I'm unmuted. And Vines.
Old Garrett.
I just had to check. Like, I had a second. I was like, did I unmute? Yeah, I unmuted. But Vines pitched 14 games this year with, you know, and Vines coming into the season was a guy that we kind of had an eye on and we really didn't know what to expect out of him. And his off-speed stuff this year looked really, really good. His changeup was inconsistent, but it was fine. He put up a 3.24 ERA at Rome and, you know, the real struggle with him was when his fastball lived in the zone, it got hit hard. And going forward, you know, if he could add a couple of miles per hour to that fastball or add a little bit of spin to it and make it less hittable in the zone, that's a guy that really becomes an interesting starting pitching prospect. Right now, he's an interesting prospect. He just – there's enough of a flaw with that fastball that you wonder if he's going to be able to get higher level hitters out. Another guy that had that same problem was Jared Schuster, who other than the home runs just destroyed low A pitching, but low A hitting, but he gave up so many home runs that it really kind of, it overwhelmed what he did this year. And the changeup, no one, or I'm sorry, high A, but no one at A ball can hit a changeup, and Jerry Schuster's just really, really good. And so as long as he was throwing the changeup, he was fine. It was just when he started having to break that basketball out, it could get ugly pretty quickly. And then among the guys that, you know, Schuster got promoted. And then there were a few guys that made, you know, less than 10 starts, didn't spend a ton of time there. Bryce Elder, was fantastic for them early in the season, 260 ERA. Earlier in the season, he was kind of, you know, a ground ball type guy, and he was nibbling, and we were kind of wondering how that approach would play at the upper levels. And then all of a sudden he started striking out guys, and he hasn't looked back since. He got up to AAA. He's been fantastic this year. Freddie Tarnock pitched five okay games at Rome, but by the end you could kind of tell like where his stuff was, that he was going to be fine at AA, and he was. Spencer Strider had a cup of tea there. Three games was just ridiculous, and they were just like, go ahead and go to AA. You can't talk about Rome without mentioning co-owner Alan Rangel, who was really, really good this year. I mean,
He had a really, really good year.
3.57 ERA. The peripherals were good. He struck, his strikeouts went a long way forward. And now some of that is, he's 23 at high A, and the year off, a lot of guys were striking out at that level. But he led the team in strikeouts, and he had a really, 95 strikeouts in 70 2/3 innings from a starting pitcher is a ton, and his off-speed stuff looks better. He's a guy that kind of has, I think he did enough this year at Rome where he's kind of back on the radar as, a fringe prospect that could do something. It's not very likely, but there is the potential there. Another guy that got a few games out in the as a starter was William Woods. He wasn't very good. You can't take too much out of it because he missed almost the entire year with an injury, and this was literally just about getting him innings. He didn't look that good. I'm not drawing any conclusions off of that because there just was not enough out of him to really talk about.
Yeah, and coming off an injury too, where he just he had like an elbow issue, and he just when he was talking about like his time in the Arizona Fall League, he's just now starting to feel like he can really let things loose, and that's a guy that has to rely on really being able to let that fastball loose when it's touching triple digits. If you're like holding back a little bit, all of a sudden you can be a little more ordinary, particularly with maybe some command issues with rust. So in Wood's case, we need to see more out of him. Hopefully he kind of continues to progress and maybe can reach the major leagues relatively quickly. I still think he's a reliever. I was pretty shocked that they were trying him out as a starter, but for right now, if they want to try, that's fine. But overall, I think that he's a guy that could get a lot of attention, especially in the shorter stints. What can you say about Bryce Elder? He had a fantastic season. Darius Fides, I'm with you on the fastball. It's a very, very ordinary pitch. I love the secondaries from Vines, and he does seem to know how to pitch. I would love to see kind of him get into like a driveline type program just to be able to get another tick on that fastball. I don't think it would require, him to throw another 5 miles an hour faster. I think just another tick allows that changeup in his breaking ball. It would all play off that much better. It's a lot harder to time him up. If you get a guy who like thinks that you've been throwing him a steady dose of those secondaries, and you can come in there with a fastball that can actually challenge a good hitter, then that's a really exciting pitching prospect to me. Beyond that, look, Spencer Strider wasn't there very long, but when he was there, he was special everywhere he went. The guy just throws absolute gas. And again, the guy came off not throwing very much the previous couple of years. And, to be able to kind of start the season the way he did in Augusta, where he blew our minds about how hard he was throwing and how good he looked. And then he rocketed himself through the system, made his way all the way to the major leagues this year. What his role is going forward, he was a starter all the way up until he got to Gwinnett, and then they put him in the bullpen, and then he made it to the major league bullpen, almost made the postseason roster, didn't quite make it, couldn't quite convince them to pull the trigger on that, which is completely understandable. But this is a really, really fun kind of pitching staff to watch evolve. And, Alan Rangel, You know, look, the secondaries look better, and he started really leaning on them too. It wasn't the stuff looked good. It looked real. When he got the double A, he had a good season. He did a good job largely there as well. You know, I hope that he does well. You know, for a while, it's funny. He was kind of a meme for us because, if for no other reason that Wayne Cavati seemingly every time he was visiting Rome, it was an Allen Ron Hell start. Just that's when he was able to get up there. And every time he was on recap duty, it was an Allen Ron Hell start. And to kind of see him spend all that time in Rome for what he was. And it kind of surprises me every time how young he still is. He's been around for a long time, but he still actually seemingly has some years where he could like continue to convince folks to, you know, maybe he can be a starting pitching prospect of note. But the stuff was the tuck up and the stuff was real. The strikeouts were a very nice, I guess, the nice development. He certainly had games in the past where he struck out some guys, but largely he wasn't that guy. So it was nice to see him kind of put together a pretty complete season where he was that guy. He was striking out guys on a regular clip. And, you know, if you can do that, if you can miss bats, you know, sure, we're talking about high A, and, you know, he's going to have to do that against more advanced hitters with some consistency. But, you know, to say that, you know, if you told me that Allen Ron Hell was going to be pitching his way to double A and, you know, finding success, I wouldn't have guessed that at the beginning of the season, which is why we want to make sure we kind of keep tabs on everybody in the hopes that maybe that they will be able to continue to surprise us, because we love those sorts of stories. All right, Garrett, let's wrap this thing up with the relievers. You kind of just run down the guys that, you know, that have kind of surprised us or caught our attention this year, and then we'll wrap this thing up.
Well, you have to start with Inigo Diaz, who spent most of his year at Rome and was just the best pitcher in, you know, the best reliever in the minor leagues. He struck out 54 guys in 27 innings. And I mean, that's all you got to say right there. That's just insane. There were times where he was just toying with guys. It was not a fair situation. You know, other relievers that were interesting were, Jake Higginbotham coming off of an injury. Pitched really, really well for them. You know, he's an older guy. He hasn't done very well in the fall league, so you've got to wonder if that was just him beating up on lower competition. But when he was at high A, he was fantastic. He's a guy that we're hopeful might be able to come back, you know, and make a middle reliever out of himself. It's got to kind of happen now, but, you know, got to start happening next year. But he did reasonably well. Trey Riley had a bounce back season. You know, he was really pretty bad he was very bad when he first came up to the system. And this year he was decent. You know, the strikeout numbers aren't great, and I think that he needs to strike out more batters to, you know, be able to live at the next level. But he didn't just walk the world like he had in the past, and that is a positive progression for him. And, you know, the stuff is legit. I have my questions about his delivery, whether he'll stay healthy, how well he can live in the zone and get swings and misses, but the stuff has the potential to work if it all comes together for him. A couple other guys that had great seasons. Justin Yeager had a great season after getting called up late in the year. He has a ton of command problems. That's a major, major concern with him, but the arm is live. You know, there's potential there. Zach Daniels had a really good year. Not the best peripherals. He just didn't seem to give up very hard contact ever. And so he had a really, really good year for them. He spent the whole year down there. So we'll kind of, you know, see, you know, and he's 24. So that's kind of, you know, when a guy at that age spends a whole year at high A, even when he's having success, that usually indicates that the team is not really expecting a ton out of him. So, you know, him spending the whole year there is a bit of a red flag, but performance-wise, he had a great season. And, you know, I assume he'll start at double-A next season. And if he can put up a good year at double-A, then you really start to talk about him as a guy that can be a middle reliever going down the road.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One name that I kind of want to mention as a guy who ultimately didn't finish the season with the organization is Casey Kallek. He was a guy who was pitching really well, coming off a pretty severe wrist surgery, and, you know, rebuilt his value enough, as a late inning guy for Rome that the Royals really, really wanted him, which resulted in Jorge Soler being a part of the Braves organization, as that he was the, he was the prospect that was traded to the Royals to get Soler into the system. You know, didn't pitch quite as well in the Royals system, but at the same time, you know, for a guy who's coming off a really pretty severe wrist surgery the way he did, he kind of showed out a good bit. I still think that Trey Riley has a real chance to be the stuff. It looks like a major league arm to me, but he only had so much time. But I will say this is a really nice bounce back year for him. Also, shout out to Dylan Spain, who ended the year with the Rome Braves. Didn't make a ton of appearances this year, but did not give up an earned run in his debut season as a pro. A guy who was kind of like a D2 Hawaii school that, you know, he wasn't even on the team for the year that he was drafted. He just showed up to an open tryout and, you know, blew the doors off the joint, and the Braves took a chance on him, and it looks like they might actually have a real relief prospect there. You know, Zach Daniels had a good year, really, really kind of excited. Justin Yeager's a guy who, again, the stuff looks really, really good. Certainly when things get away from him, they really get away from him. He has a bit of a wild thing aspect to him. But, you know, and like Davis Schwab's like a live arm, even though he doesn't seem to always know where it's going. Coleman Huntley actually was, you know, striking out a fair number of guys as well. Really, really interesting kind of relief pedigree and prospects that we saw in Rome. You know, obviously the guys that had the best pedigree moved on relatively quickly. Indigo Diaz being chief among them. He should have been promoted a lot sooner than it took to actually get him promoted. I'm very curious as to what he looks next year, though, because post-COVID did not look good. And the, you know, Arizona Fall League hasn't been particularly kind either. So I'm a little bit curious as to kind of what he looks like next year. But he looks like a guy who could be really, really interesting as a relief prospect, possibly for the Braves, even going as like soon as next year. So we'll see how that goes. That's pretty much it, guys. That's kind of goes us through the Rome Braves roster for 2021. Garrett, do you have any closing thoughts before we let everyone go?
Nope, I am good to go.
All right. We appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to us yet again to talk about the minor league baseball. We are doing a minor league player review series. That is kind of an ongoing process. We're posting basically one a day, going through, I would say it's going to be a list of around 40 or so prospects that we're going to be going up over the course of the next few weeks, where we kind of just do a little bit of a, hey, this is how they've done since we put them on our prospect list or since we've talked about them last, guys who have kind of put themselves on our radar since we've made our prospect list. That's kind of what these guys are as we're kind of adding them, as we're kind of putting out these reviews, that we're about, I want to say probably a third of a way through what we have planned, on the site already. So make sure you go check those out, the ones that you've missed, and keep an eye out on talkingchop.com for those daily player review rollouts. Not just on the minor league side, there's also major league, player reviews happening as well. We're kind of going through the guys who didn't play a whole lot or weren't particularly interesting to start with. And then we're going to kind of get into the roster nitty gritty probably in the next week or so. We can start seeing a lot of guys who are really key pieces of the World Series run. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the podcast, make sure you search Talking Chop on whatever podcast provider you choose, whether it's Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all those. If you search Talking Chop, not only will you get this podcast, you will also get the Talking Chop flagship program hosted by the great Brad Rowland, as well as sometimes myself. And then you also get the Daily Hammer hosted by the great Sean Coleman, who's been doing a great job with kind of a daily sort of, I mean, the offseason's going to be more kind of an every other day type of thing with the Hammer. But that's kind of like a general newsy type podcast where, you know, 15 or 20 minutes while you're running into work, you can listen up, get caught up on your Braves news. He's been doing a great job with that. The support on the podcast and on the site over the last few weeks has just been amazing. We really appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you all so much. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.